Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. We're double teaming today. That's because I have two creative guests. Jessica Dermody, who spent a good deal of her career in front of audiences before moving to producing, directing, and writing. And actress Lolita Brinkley, who's also worn several hats. Their paths have come together in the Working Artist Theater production presentation of the powerful play Life Without Parole, which is part of the 18th annual New York International Fringe Festival. More about that in a minute, but first, some guest background. Armed with a Bachelor of Arts degree from Florida State University School of Theater, Jessica made her way to New York, where over the years she was part of the Broadway companies of Movin' Out, The Producers, Young Frankenstein, and Annie, just to name a few. As a former member of Awaken Entertainment, Jessica worked as a producer on Superior Donuts and Green Day's American Idiot, which were nominated for Drama Desk and Tony Awards for Best Musical. She's also worked in film. Her first credit, associate producer on the award-winning independent Construction. In 2005, Jessica co-founded Working Artist Theater Project, and in that capacity has directed and produced more than 20 productions and events. Lolita Brinkley has a rather unique resume. In 2007, she left her job as a patent lawyer in Chicago to move to New York and pursue her dream of being an actor. She's also an engineer, coach, and inspirational leader. Lolita got her Master's of Fine Arts in Theater from Sarah Lawrence College and has a slew of acting credits to her name. They include co-starring roles on Law & Order, SUV, as well as recurring roles in As the World Turns, One Life to Live, All My Children, and The Blacklist. On stage, Lolita's appeared in As You Like It, The Winter's Tale, Twelfth Night, and The Seagull. That's the short list. She plays Helen in Life Without Parole, which is directed by Jessica. So, ladies, welcome and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we get personal, let's talk about Life Without Parole. Jessica, what's the play's background?
The play's background, it's actually been around for 10 years. This play came from a group of women in Chino Hills Prison in California. And this group of women was studied by Dr. Elizabeth Leonard, who is not a playwright. She actually wrote a book called Convicted Survivors. And she studied this group of women and as her PhD dissertation. She met a playwright, Warren Duty. They worked at the same university, and he kind of collided with her work. She gave him all of her findings, research, and then he curated this play from the actual words, stories, testimonies, and parole hearings of 42 women who are all incarcerated for killing their abusive partners.
So that was the common thread among this group of 42.
Yes.
And the play is based on their stories.
It follows their full stories, their childhood, their early relationships, into the meeting of their abusers, talks very intimately about their children and the abuse that they have sustained, but then also follows them through their experience into prison and ultimately through parole hearings or eventual parole hearings that they may have. So it comments on the women themselves, which is a self-run group, completely run by the inmates. There's no facilitators. There's no...
You mean like a support group?
It's a support group. It's called Convicted Women Against Violence. It was founded by Brenda Klubein, who has now been released from prison. But she founded this group out of need, finding that there were other women who were in the same situation. And they bonded together to kind of figure out how they got to where they are. It's a talk therapy group. They get together very much just like a Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, and they talk amongst each other.
And one interesting thing about the group that Brenda started is that they were very instrumental in getting laws changed. Because prior to 1992, women were not allowed to introduce evidence of abuse in their criminal proceedings.
Oh, come on.
No, that's true. And then with Brenda's work, and then some politicians got involved in California, and they were able to get some legislation passed that allowed the women to then start to be able to introduce evidence of abuse at trial. So these, prior to 92, these women were going to trial, and they could not even mention that they had been abused by their intimate partners.
That just seems
Crazy. And 1992 was not so long ago.
Not so long ago at all. There's actually a really beautiful documentary called Sin by Silence that gives a real firsthand look at this particular group of women, namely Brenda Klubein, her journey in finding convicted women against violence, how the group came together. And then there's a law that was passed in 2012, which is actually the Sin by Silence law, this group of women helped usher into legislation that actually has gotten a lot of these women out of their life sentences and some of them released.
Oh, so it's been helpful. I mean, it's been retroactive in a sense.
It allows them to bring their cases back with all of the evidence and the awareness that, you know, some of these women were in 30-year abusive relationships. I think the most important thing about this group of women is that, you know, when we think of people in prison, we think of hardened criminals who are gangbangers and drug addicts. These women are your mom and your grandmother. And I mean, one of these women, she sustained a 30-year abusive relationship. She went to prison in her late 40s. She has children. She has grandchildren. She just died last year in prison serving a life sentence. And if you see her and get to know her, you just cannot believe that this was how this woman's life played out. And I think that's the important thing that, you know, we're doing here. None of these women will say, I'm innocent, I don't deserve to be here.
They
acknowledge fully. And that is part of this group is just like you go to an AA meeting and they say, you know, hi, I'm Jessica Dermody, I'm an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. They stand up, they say, hi, I'm Jessica Dermody, I'm serving 15 years to life for the shooting death of my husband, Barry Garner. You know, like that's kind of what they do. The play takes place in 1999. But like we said, there's laws being passed, you know, as recently as 2012 pertaining to this. So
explain the play to me, because Lolita, you're just not speaking from a transcript of your particular character, Helen.
Well, this play, I kind of liken it to one of the Greek chorus plays, because there are five women. And basically throughout, what we're doing is telling the story of these five women. And it's done in a way that it's surrounding my character, who you're going to see that goes through a process, a particular process, an actual parole hearing during the play. But you just don't hear my story. You hear the story of the four other women as well. And it's been, Warren did a very creative job of weaving these stories together so that it seems like it's just one voice, but you're really hearing five voices.
So we relive your experience, your abusive relationship, the actual act of violence, your coming to prison, and this new life that was created for you behind bars.
Right. We see everything. We start from the beginning, because a lot of times what happens is these women, there is a whole pattern. So we start with my upbringing, my childhood, on through to how I met my husband, then what happened to me during the trial, through the prison, and then you see my journey going through the parole hearing.
Are the 42 women that this play is based on, they're a disparate group? They're eclectic?
They come from all different backgrounds, and that's what I think is so beautiful about how this story is told. There's no one type of person who gets stuck in these types of situations. So, you know, to us, it was about having a range of age. You know, we tried to have a representation as accurately as possible as we could to show that these are women from all different kinds of backgrounds, you know, all different races. And more importantly, within the stories, we meet each woman with the most intimate details from their childhood. And some of them have sustained, you know, the things that you would expect, sexual abuse, drug abuse, alcohol within their families. And then some of them have no prior history of abuse whatsoever. Completely loving families that they could have gone to at any point in time. And I think in our experience in rehearsal, it is just incredible what guilt and shame does
how
to the
they
human
shut you
spirit
up.
And how it shuts you up. So we learn about that constantly. There's constant discovery, right, about what those things are and how it shuts you in. We also have a character in the play who actually did not commit murder. She is in for conspiracy to commit because her 12-year-old son actually killed her husband because he was being sexually involved with his sister and was abusive, beating his mother. So, and she is serving the sentence for her children. I've been blown away by people who are just very liberal, very educated, and sometimes the things that they'll say were, you know, it's just, you talk to, what is this play about? I'm like, oh, it's about, you know, these women in prison. And they're like, oh, well, it's always the man's fault. And I'm like,
there's an enlightened statement.
I mean, it's crazy, some of the things that I hear from people that I wouldn't expect that. But that's a general perspective of this issue that we're really hoping to kind of attack and address.
That's one of the reasons that I'm so attracted to this play, is because the play is about education. It really is educating people as to what domestic violence is. And there are so many people who don't understand the circumstances and what happens. And I also wanted to bring up that our play does a good job of creating this spectrum. It's just not older women, it's not middle-aged women, but we have young women who are affected by issues of domestic violence. They may not be married to their partner, mm-hmm. but we're finding that young girls in high school and college are also the victims of these abuses from their intimate partners. And the play actually addresses that with one of the young women in the play as a character.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Jessica Dermody, producer, director of Life Without Parole, and one of the stars of the play, Lolita Brinkley. Lolita, how'd you relate to this character? And tell me where she fits in your characters of the past.
Well, where she fits in my characters of the past, I loved Cleopatra. I did some work with Cleopatra, and I loved her because she was so thoughtful and creative, and she was this basically just general commanding an army behind the scenes.
It sounds like you were friends.
Yeah.
I loved my friendship with Cleopatra. Yeah.
So she had this great voice, but then when I come to Helen, her voice had been squashed from a very early age. She felt like she had no voice. She wanted to be invisible. Mm. So you look at this woman who was out there doing these things, commanding great armies, and then this woman who couldn't even command and protect herself.
So what does that take from you?
Well, I just have to go to my most vulnerable places and let that be heard, because I, like Helen, I look at the rest of the... I look at women in my community. I looked at a lot of documentaries to understand that pain, because there's pain, to understand the effects of shame, and then to allow myself to open up and go deep and say, here is shame, and this is what shame can do to you, but you don't have to be stuck in shame. Mm-hmm. There is a way out, and that's the message I'm sending through the play, is there is hope. We can find our way through it. We don't have to stay in it. We can grow, learn from it and grow, and I believe that's what my character shows throughout the play, that she's learned, she's grown, and she's accepted responsibility.
But contrast that with having a role in All My Children. Are they at odds with each other in a sense?
The reason I got into acting is because
why'd you give up being a lawyer?
Because I felt like I wanted to tell the stories of women that nobody else wanted to tell. So with every character I play, I look for that secret, that thing that nobody wants to talk about. And that's where I focus my work, and that's where I focus my creativity, to allow those stories to be told. Whether you're on All My Children playing a nurse, or whether you're on Law and Order playing an attorney, there is a story there that woman has that has not been told. And I look for that. And I try to bring that out however I can in my work.
Wow, that's kind of intense. Even with just a walk-on?
Yes. Yes, because there is a story there.
Wow, that's really interesting. So that's what attracted you, Jessica, about Lolita?
Absolutely. You know, interestingly about this piece, being a producer of this piece, it's really hard to find strong roles for women in this industry. It's getting a little bit better, but you know, here's a play that is so rich with, I mean, there are five roles for women that are not, they're all of equal weight. They all have their own storyline. They're very, you know, very intense character work for a range of ages, which you don't really typically see. And it's also something that's addressing, it's not girlfriends talking in the bathroom. You know, this is something that has a message and a story. So that, as a producer, really drew me to it. And I did a very not typical audition process, which I generally like to do. I'm not a big fan of the one-on-one walking in and whatever. That's all fine and good. What we did for this audition is I had about 30 women come into the room, sit in a circle as though they were with the group, and everybody had been given a choice of monologues, whatever character they felt like the words drew connected to. And then we sat in the room and we just had them tell the story. You know, everybody just kind of chose when they went and they just told the story to the group. And I don't know how you felt about it, Lilita. I was a little nervous about it because I knew it was so unconventional, but I felt it was the best way to see interactively how people would get together right out of the bat. And I thought it was really successful. And I remember Lilita was wearing an orange. She wore an orange T-shirt. Some of the women came in with like somewhat kind of a prison-esque kind of thing. But I remember her going and her strength was so striking, but then there was these beautiful undercurrents of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really the actor's challenge in this piece, and what I love working with it, and we keep finding it's like constant discovery.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Constant discovery. Because the impulse with roles like this is you're like, oh, she's a battered woman and her life is so terrible and she's serving a life sentence and it's about crying and screaming and being angry. And the reality is that when we're telling stories and recounting stories, we don't immediately go there and we don't live in that spot. We spike in those places. So it's such a process, so much deep emotional life. And the other great thing about these characters is because it's a conglomerate, it's 42 women's stories condensed into 5 women's stories. So you as a character, we have like clues along the way as to what this person is, but it really is up to each individual actress to pull their story together and build their character, which I think is another really unique aspect of this play for actors, which I'm loving finding that opportunity for people, because you don't often get to really build a character based off of your own life experiences and then mix it in with the clues that are along the way.
What is it like to be directed by a woman?
I love it, and particularly for this piece, because it's speaking from a woman's perspective, and Jessica allows us the room to find the characters. And these characters are three-dimensional. They laugh, they cry, they get angry, they're afraid, they love, they hate. They are three-dimensional. They're not just one thing. And I appreciate that Jessica gives us the opportunity to explore deeply to find out who these people really are. And they're just not inmates. They're mothers, they're grandmothers. So we get to bring that aspect to our work.
Do you think that this would be the same experience for you if this specific play was directed by a man?
I'd have to think about that. I like the fact that Jessica brings the woman's perspective, an understanding of where these women came from and where they're going. I feel like a man would probably bring that same perspective, but it's just different because there's this camaraderie that we have because we're all sisters, so to speak, in this journey together.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can work for you and sometimes that can work against you. Let's use the stereotype of jealousy among women or feeling, mm-hmm. A little put out by the fact that you're bossing people around. How do you feel about
she's not bossing us around. Collaborative director, and I've enjoyed working with you through the process.
Do you think that's unusual that directors, regardless of their gender, are collaborative?
There are many directors are collaborative, but I feel like Jessica, I was really surprised by the discovery process that you've allowed us to go through. I feel like most directors with a short rehearsal period, because we have a short rehearsal period, want to get to it, get the blocking in, get the lines down. But Jessica took the time in our short rehearsal period to create an ensemble. So we created these bonding experiences. And I feel like these women, I feel like I've known them for months and years, and I've only known them for not even 2 weeks yet.
That's crazy.
So she's taking the time to build the background that's necessary to create this ensemble of love and togetherness and support that we need to tell this kind of story.
And how do you feel about directing women versus directing men? And were you taken seriously initially? You're still an anomaly. There aren't a lot of you guys.
No, it's definitely so. You know, I've gone to many forums and sat on many forums specifically about women directors. It's not an easy thing to do and get recognized as. And the reality of this is I generally will choose to produce my own work because I'm very specific about the types of things that I like to do and the types of in the groups of people that I want to work with because like Lolita said, you know, it's about process and every director has their own process. To me, I think because I'm a conservatory trained actress, I spent years, you know, I've been on camera and performing.
You've walked a mile in those shoes.
I've walked a mile in those shoes. Mm-hmm. And that brings such a different perspective to my directing. And I know how important it is for that process. And we've kind of talked about it where, you know, as an actor, you're trained to do all of your actor homework. You go home, you build your stories, you write it down in a journal, you talk to yourself in the mirror about your past, but you don't really often get to put that work on display. And in my process, I always feel that it is of the utmost importance to get to play that out in front of other people because it makes it real. It no longer makes it a secret to yourself, or it also validates the work that you're doing, which a lot of directors, I think sometimes there's a perspective that it's like, well, that's their work and they need to do it and they need to get off book and they need to come in and they need to whatever. I feel like it's so important to create a process that people feel A, safe and nurtured. And what I find in the performances, especially with something like this, where we are really trying, these are not characters. They are real people. And it is so important to me that they speak like real people and that it's not words off of a page. And a lot of actors in their process feel like, hey, I've got my lines and that's my job and that's what I do. Mm-hmm. It's so much more. So I feel like you can't really do that kind of work on your own. I got into this in theater specifically because it is a collaborative process.
But it's a weird contrast for something like this play versus your involvement in the producers or in the Green Day production. Yeah. I mean, does that not make your head spin?
You know, obviously, my resume is
eclectic.
Is very, very eclectic. I mean, I've done, you know, projects that, like, I did a multimedia project called Welcome to the Jungle that we did at Ars Nova with one of my dearest friends, Chad Luke Skiro. And, you know, we were doing a video, it's a multimedia project, and we did video parodies about, you know, Kesha selling dog biscuits that are flavored like her and, you know, crazy things like that. So it's a wild contrast.
I'm sorry I missed that.
I know. You can watch it. It's, it's on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
last year I did a play about the photographer Deanne Arbus and her life. And I love finding really strong characters. In a lot of ways, I feel like the work finds you. You know, it's the way I know. I think like in all of the auditions you could have gone on, Lolita, in that, you know, in that day, you came to us not even really knowing what you're walking into, but you kind of like you go with your gut. I'm really big on going.
Do you feel
that
way?
Yeah.
Do you agree with her?
I do. And I actually almost missed it. I usually watch the trade magazines on a regular basis, but I had missed reading them that week. And so I'm sitting at my living room and I'm reading the magazine and I see this audition that's for tomorrow. So I thought, and it's 6 o'clock at night. So I said, oh my goodness, I would love to do this just because the title caught me. And I said, okay, I'm going to email. So I emailed and I just wanted to get in and I was able to get in for the audition, but it was just such faith that I had that this project was indeed what I thought it was going to be just by the little summary that was listed on playbill.com.
Well, wait a minute. Why didn't your agent tell you about this?
Agents,
I mean, you're reading the magazine and you said, hey.
This is a collaborative process as well, actor agent. I do my work.
Your
they
homework.
Do their work. And we work together. If I find something interesting, I will call her and say, would you please submit me for this? Or if I find something that there's an email there and I can do a direct submit, and being 6 o'clock at night and the audition was on Friday, I said, I better do a direct submit.
Gotcha.
So I did. And luckily, I was brought in.
Well, the stars were aligned.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes things happen because they happen. But that's obviously my naivete. I just assumed, you know, you reach a certain point, you get an agent and you say, hey, you know, do this for me, as opposed to, You're still kind of pounding the pavement.
We're always out there looking for good stories. Because me, I'm always, like Jessica, I'm always looking for strong female roles. I'm looking to tell those stories. If I can't find the stories, then I create the stories.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are producer-director Jessica Dermody and actress Lolita Brinkley. Do you think you two are, oh, forgive this expression, living the dream at your ages? How old are you, Lolita?
I will decline to answer that question on the grounds that work may escape me.
Okay.
Right. Well, I have no problem. I'm 35.
That's so young.
Yeah. It is young in the grand scheme of it.
Considering what you've done?
I don't know what making it is, to be completely honest.
Well, you're paying the bills. People know your name, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that is all happening. But I have such like a compulsive thing about doing this kind of work. And I know that every project is finite, whether you are doing a Broadway show that's going to last for 8 to 10 years, or you're doing a show in the Fringe that has 5 productions, you know, it's all the work is finite. So you constantly have to be creating your own things. And I think that's kind of what Lolita's talking about is, and I'm such a big proponent of taking the reins, producing your own work, or finding people to produce the work with so that you're doing projects that you really love. And in that, it's a personal journey to success and what success means.
And it's a personal definition.
And a personal definition.
Right. Sure.
Yes. For sure. You know, looking back on my life and where I'm at and the fact that I'm like about to walk into working on my 15th Broadway show, which is insane to me. And doing all of these amazing projects and building my own not-for-profit and living and working in New York City, you know, as a kid, all I ever wanted to do was live in New York and, like, have the apartment that Tom Hanks had in the movie Big, and I wanted a trampoline. And, like, I wanted, like, a porch swing in my apartment.
So
like,
did you get
ridiculous.
All those 4 things?
Those things I don't have yet. But
I do have
an apartment in New York City. And, you know, I did move here and and all I ever also wanted to do was work in the theater.
Just who needs a trampoline?
You know, a trampoline when you can go to work in the theater? Sometimes there's a trampoline in the theater.
Hello.
You know? Or like, you know, some treadmills on the stage. Who knows? You know, it's a crazy thing. But I still feel like it's always going to be a journey, you know, that's like, oh, like being nominated for Tony and going and sitting there and being in the presence of, you know, all of these people. It's an amazing experience, but it's a finite experience. It happens and then it's over. And then in a weird way, I say this with people all the time. We're in the one industry where, like, you're doing a project, you're so passionate about it, it feels successful, you feel so good, and then it happens, and the next day you're like, huh, well, I mean, I guess I can go be a barista at Starbucks. I feel like there's that constant give and take in this.
Oh, so, sure.
You know, and what I love about Lolita is, you know, she's like one of the most overqualified people for life that I've ever met. And
what, does she have a trampoline?
I don't know.
I do, actually.
Get out.
See, she's living the dream.
Do you feel you're living the dream?
I do feel like I'm living the dream. If you had asked me that question maybe 3 months ago, I probably would have said no because I hadn't reached certain points that I had on my milestone chart. Mm-hmm. But I really feel blessed to be able to get up and do what I do. I get to tell these stories that nobody else is telling. I get to create the stories if nobody has created them for me. I'm blessed to be able to do this. I feel honored to be able to put life into some words that somebody has put on a piece of paper. And there's nothing else I would rather be doing. It definitely gets frustrating at times. I would like to see more credits on my resume. But you know what? Every day I get up and I look forward to, what can I create today? What story can I tell today? What difference can I make today? So yes, I feel like I'm living the dream.
On that upbeat, exciting, exhilarating note, we're going to have to end. You ladies are pretty amazing and pretty inspiring. And I really enjoyed having a conversation with you today. Great successes in your careers. And I'll follow you guys. I'll stalk you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.